You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Over the middle, caught Saunders, Jalen Saunders, touchdown.
Harris to the end zone.
Mazzoli chased down, end zone, touchdown, Luke Tasker. Into tight traffic, this looks like it's picked, it is picked by Richard Leonard.
On second down, Mazzoli looks for Banks in deep, and Banks makes the catch, touchdown. Beats two Ottawa defenders of the football, Pruno and Rowe. And Banks has his second touchdown catch of the game.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, we have a loaded show today. Lots of stuff to talk about, Ticats-wise and, of course, CFL-wise. But we have to start by talking about some things that are happening with you and I. There are some changes coming to Podski Wee Wee in the next little while. And there a lot of things, a lot of exciting things, things that you and I have been talking about. I believe you teased it at the end of the last episode we did 2 weeks ago. And we're finally ready to kind of tell everyone what's going on. We have decided, Mike and I, together, we're going to step up our social media game from now on and going into the future. We're opening up a Twitter account and an Instagram account for the show. So it's not just going to be coming at Mike underscore Ticats or Josh Smith underscore 82. We're going to have a Podski Wee Wee Twitter account and a Podski Wee Wee Instagram account. Now, I personally am pretty terrible at Instagram. I've had an Instagram account for maybe 8 or so months, and I've never once posted a picture. But we're both going to use, like, Mike and I are both going to be using both these accounts. Maybe Mike, you've taken pictures of yourself with some players that have visited you at work. So maybe you'll be the guy who does more with the Instagram account, but we're going to use it for something. We'll figure out what exactly later on. Maybe I'll start taking pictures from the games or something. I don't know. Who knows?
We'll
figure something out. As for Twitter, I think we're both pretty fairly active tweeters on there, and instead of just listening to our banalities and our insights on our own personal accounts, we're going to have a show account to do the same thing and probably do some other fun stuff there. Again, just like with the Instagram account, we'll kind of figure out exactly what we're going to use these things for in the coming weeks and months as we get ramping up towards next season, which is crazy to think we're already at the end of the 2017 season. So anyone out there listening to the show right now, if you want to follow us on Twitter or Instagram or both, preferably, we made things pretty simple for everyone. And we have the same handle for both platforms. And drumroll, please, it's at Podski Wee Wee. It's I know, very inventive, but no one took the name, obviously enough, because who would? But yeah, so we're going to use those. Those hit us up. Actually, right now, as you're listening to this very show, you can head on over to Twitter and Instagram, and where those sites, those accounts are going to be up. You're going to be ready to take your likes and your everything else, your follows, and we're looking forward to it. So just hit those follow buttons as you're listening, and just, again, remember, we made it really easy for you. On Twitter, at PodskiWeeWee, PodskiWeeWee. Instagram, the exact same thing. Pretty exciting, right, Mike?
It is very exciting. We are trying to step up our game at the Podski Wee Wee podcast, and I'm pretty excited about all these new changes that are happening. Maybe it took us a little long to get the Twitter account going, as pretty much every podcast, CFL podcast, has their own Twitter account representing the show, their shows, but better late than never, right?
That's true. Better to wait and do it right than to rush and do it poorly. We took the, as much as it pains me to say, we took the OSEG approach, and we decided to do this right instead of just rushing out and doing it like they did with the Renegades. So we're the, as much as I hate saying this, we're kind of taking the Red Blacks method here, and we decided let's do this the right way. And that's what we're going to try to do. We're going to try to make this as fun for everyone, fun for ourselves as well, and we'll see how it goes. But that's not the only big news, Mike, and this is the one that I'm really, really excited about. Everyone out there listening to the show, you're finally going to be able to show everyone who your favorite CFL/Ticats podcast is. That's right, folks. We are going to start selling merch, baby. I haven't really finalized everything yet, but soon we will be launching an online store for all you out there to buy some T-shirts, some hoodies, and a whole host of other merch to show off your Podski love. We will have a host of designs on there for you to choose from. We'll be adding designs as time goes by. Basically, whenever an idea strikes myself or Mike, hey, this might make for a cool thing to sell on a T-shirt, we'll come up with stuff. This one, this is the one that excites me the most, and I hope everyone out there listening will enjoy sporting some sweet Podski WeWe gear in the very, very near future.
Yeah, that's it's very cool. I look forward to maybe seeing some fans in the stands at Tim Hortons Field wearing some Podski WeWe shirts or what have you.
Yeah, this is this one has really got my creative juices flowing, coming up with ideas for things, and I've talked to Mike about some, and I've got some more in the hopper that I'll be running by him soon. This one's got the wheels turned. The hamster's on the wheel in the old head, thinking of, oh, this would look great on a tee. Like, I'm trying to just think of cool stuff I'd like to wear. And that's kind of where I'm coming with this. And hopefully everyone out there listening will get excited about this as well. We'll want to grab a T-shirt or a hoodie, or we're going to have like iPhone and Samsung phone cases if you want to go that crazy. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of stuff out there that you're going to see our logo on, and hopefully some other stuff in the near future. I'm very excited about that. I think this is going to be really cool.
Podski WeWe underwear, Podski WeWe. No, I don't know about that, but yeah, there's going to be some stuff to show off your love for the Podski podcast. And we're always grateful for any listener we get. And if you want to wear some merch, that would be awesome too.
Absolutely, absolutely. But last piece of personal news for us. We've got the Twitter, we got the Instagram, the store's coming. This is for Mike. Mike, you got some exciting news. He's going to be heading out to Ottawa, so why don't you share kind of what your Grey Cup plans are for everyone. Mike, take it away, pal.
Well, I'll be heading out to Ottawa on Friday. I should arrive at about 6 p.m. I have some buttons or pins or whatever you want to call them with the new Podski WeWe logo on them. So I got about 30 of them. I already got some people on Twitter that are interested in grabbing one, but there's still around, 15 to 20 left. So if you see me around at a party, I think I'll have my fanny pack with all the pins in them. So if you want a button, just come up and ask me, and I'd be glad to give one to you.
Did The Rock ever get back to you about where to buy a fanny pack?
He did not, unfortunately. I think he's a little popular. He probably doesn't pay attention to tweets from unknown folks.
Probably not. But yeah, so check out Mike. Like, so what are your plans? You heading? Pardon me, my voice is losing me. I can't speak today. Are you heading out to any parties? Like, do you have any plans?
Well,
like,
nothing really set in stone except for the Three Down Nation party, the Three Down Get Down, I believe it's called, Saturday from 1 till 3. I shall be there. I got my ticket already. So if you want to come say hi, I will be there on Saturday afternoon from 1 to 3.
Oh, man, that's going to be fun. You, Drew, Justin. Oh, man, you guys are going to have a blast.
Yeah, Drew will have to pack his
extra pair of running shoes.
Yeah, not his fancy shoes because, we all know the past.
We all do. We've talked to him about that in the past. We've shared that story many times. Hey, you know what? Yes. If you head to the Three Down Get Down, I believe it's called, why don't you go up to, and if you've never talked to Mike, go up to him and ask him, hey, man, what's up with the story with the shoes? It's a good story. It's worthy of always sharing.
Yes, it is. So, yeah, other than that, though, I'm not really sure which parties I'll be. I'll probably be, I have to go do the Tie Cats pub crawl thing. I'll make an appearance there on Friday night, I believe. But after that, it's just like where the wind takes me.
Hey, man, take some pictures. Post them up on our new Instagram account. That's a great way to kind of get it started.
I will be taking pictures no matter what, so might as well put them up there, right? So I'm excited to do that. Yeah, for sure.
Cool, cool, cool. I hope you have a great time there, Mike. Sadly, I cannot join you. I really, really wanted to, but I'm heading to the Vanier Cup on Saturday, so my weekend is kind of full with footballing here in Hamilton. Hey, we'll talk about
Vanier
in a bit. Next year?
Next year in Edmonton.
Yeah, I know. It's tempting, especially because you said I could stay at your place.
Yeah, no hotel room payments. So. Yeah, think about it.
If all I got to do is pay for a flight out there, I don't know. There are direct flights from Hamilton. Now we're getting into some personal stuff here. But there are some direct flights from Hamilton to Edmonton now. So I don't know, man. It's awfully tempting. I think I might have to take you up on that offer, pal.
Yeah, you better. You still got lots of time. So lots of time to think.
Well, and I don't have to worry about booking a hotel. So I just have to. Yeah. I literally just have to pack a bag and head up on a plane. I got a place to sleep, and I'll sleep on the floor. I don't care.
I got an extra room with a blow up mattress. So there you go, blow up mattress, buddy.
Oh, you're making it even better every time we talk about it. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the cool stuff we got going down. Meet Mike at Grey Cup. Tell him how great he is. Tell him he's a bozo. I don't know. Do whatever you want. Mike's, yeah. I'm sure you're going to meet some great people. You're going to take some great pictures. You're going to see those stories on the old Instagram, the new Instagram account that we have. And yeah, we're starting a store. We're going to be on Twitter as a show, Instagram as a show. Lots of new and exciting things coming your way from Podski Wee Wee in the near future. But now let's talk about some actual football.
What about the logo, Josh?
The people will see the logo when they see the logo, Michael. We have decided to change up the logo a little bit. I think I don't want to give it away too much, but I think the 90s wrestling fans, of which many of our listeners, I believe, are, will see the logo and know exactly what it's referencing. I have meticulously spent a lot of time on this because I'm a perfectionist. And you're going to see the logo on Mike's buttons, a prototype of the logo. I've done some tweaks since then. So basically,
you're going to say butt.
No, but you know what that means? That means that the buttons that Mike is handing out, those are collector's items because we're not using that specific one anymore. So you got yourself some. It's like getting an Atlantic Schooners T-shirt back when they were going to be a thing 30 or so years ago. In 30 years, these buttons are going to be collector's items, Mike.
Yeah, we're worth millions. So. But I will say it's like pretty much it's the same idea, just something, there's a little bit added to it. But I'm really excited to get these buttons, man. I don't know. I know they're just buttons, but it's just cool to me to have something with the Podski Wee Wee logo on it.
Yeah, that's why I'm so hyped about the store, man. I'm gonna pick up some shirts just because it's like, man, this is my thing, and it's I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think it's cool. That's pretty much how I feel about it. I just think I saw the guys out in Saskatchewan. They've been selling shirts. It's kind of where I got the idea from. And you see some of the shirts on TV, and it's just like, that's kind of neat. And I want a piece of that. So we're going to have the buttons. That's kind of our first merch launch, and Mike's gracious enough to just hand those out. So we got some buttons coming everyone's way, and then we got some cool stuff with our new logo on it coming soon that you can find in our shop. So lots of cool stuff. But, yes, let's talk about some actual football, Mike. Let's get to the reason why most people here. They don't want to hear us pat ourselves in the back and slurp each other about how cool we are. They want to hear us talk about football. And we're going to talk about first what we always talk about. That's the Hamilton Tire Cats. And sadly, we have to talk about Johnny frickin' Manziel again because this guy just won't go away. And I'm just – at this point, I'm kind of tired of the story, but it's news. And we have to discuss it. We have to talk about it. So the Johnny Manziel saga continues here in Hamilton. Dave Naylor, who is now that he's back on the CFL beat, seems to be breaking every story imaginable. We got another one later that's just was a bombshell when it came out. But this is one he broke earlier. I believe it was last week, I think it was. He said that the CFL is going to extend the deadline for the Ticats to offer Johnny Manziel a contract beyond that initial November 30th date that they set way back in September. This is apparently so he can complete the league's requirements, which we don't know about, and which from this I can gather he has not done, because if he had done, they wouldn't be extending the deadline, right?
Yeah.
Now, I will start by saying no one knows what the requirements are for Johnny Manziel to sign a CFL contract, because those details were never made public, and I understand that, and I get that, and I'm not saying they should have been. But considering the league set these parameters back in late September, and Manziel still hasn't completed them, doesn't that sound off some alarm bells for you, Mike? Like, either these requirements were so extensive that he was never going to get them done by November 30th to begin with, and if that's the case, why set that as the date? Or he's just not taking this as seriously as he probably should. These are kind of the only two conclusions that we can really come to, and if the latter is true, get him the hell out of here. We don't need him.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's hard to judge him because we don't know what exactly these parameters are, but I'm assuming it's just don't be a jerk, don't be a jackass, you know, don't hit girls, don't get in trouble with the law. Now, I haven't heard any breaking news stories about Johnny Manziel, you know, being drunk off his ass somewhere or getting into another domestic violence situation or anything like that. So for them to extend the deadline again, I just don't really know what to think about it. It's a bit of a head scratcher to me.
Yeah, it really is. The last we heard about Johnny Manziel, there was a picture that floated around online of him looking a little bit out of shape. That's kind of
right.
If the worst thing he's doing is he's a little tubby and he's kind of vacationing, that's not really that bad. Like, we haven't ever since this whole thing sort of reached the public phase of everything where it's like, yes, the Ticats are negotiating with him. Yes, he wants to come to the CFL and all that other sorts of stuff. You haven't really heard anything too negative about him. Maybe, yeah, I've heard the maybe he's a little bit out of shape, and we saw the pictures, and that's about it. So I'm really curious what he hasn't done that he's supposed to, or if this was just such a long list of things that he had to get done that there was just, looking at it, it's just like no way it would happen by the time it was supposed to. And if that's the case, why would the CFL even bother saying, oh, this is the date, but we know he's not going to make it, so don't worry, we'll just extend it anyway. I don't know. There's secrecy here, and I understand why, but it's making this a really hard thing to sort of gauge as to who we should be, where fault should lie, where blame should lie. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, is there actual things that he has to accomplish? Like, I don't know, like going to an anger management course or something like that. Like, is there actual things that he has to successfully complete before he's allowed in the CFL, or is it just don't get into trouble? Because if it's just don't get in trouble, then I don't see why the deadline had to be extended. Because if Johnny Manziel got into trouble, it would be on TMZ. It would be all over the place. So, yeah, I just don't get it.
Yeah, so the story that we thought would be dead by the time we finished up our show for the year looks like it's going to drag on into the foreseeable future, and we're going to be dealing with this longer and longer. Now, I remember when we talked about this when the deadline was set, I said I thought November 30th was a ridiculous deadline. I didn't think it gave the team enough time. I didn't think there was any reason not to make it until the beginning of next year. So I'm fine with the extending of the deadline. It's the circumstances surrounding why the deadline was extended that no one seems to know what they are and kind of makes for a situation that's a little untenable.
Now, do we even want Johnny Manziel anymore? Did Mazzoli impress the team enough to be the starting quarterback? There's a lot of questions here. Is June Jones coming back? Because I don't know if Manziel would want to come in if June Jones isn't there. So there's a lot of question marks about this and the Ticats quarterback situation going into the offseason. But that's a whole different story.
Yeah, that is a whole different story. This team has a lot of decisions to make, but we know the Johnny Manziel one doesn't have to be made in the next week or so, and that means that this is going to continue to be a story until it's either decided one way or another. So I'm sure this is not the last. Actually, I can guarantee you this is not the last time we'll be talking about Johnny Manziel, because either he's going to be granted the ability to play in the CFL or he's not. We're going to talk about it then too. So hopefully this is the penultimate, the second to last time we're ever going to talk about Johnny Manziel until we finally find out what exactly he's going to do. Other Ticats news that we have here, Mike, we got to talk about the Ticats All-Stars. Six players from the Hamilton Ticats were named East Division All-Stars. That would be receivers Brandon Banks and Luke Tasker, offensive guard Ryan Bombin, linebacker Larry Dean, defensive back Richard Leonard, and kicker punter Sergio Castillo. Castillo was named as the place kicker for the East. Six All-Stars for a team that started 0-8 isn't too shabby, now is it?
No, I was surprised by the high number, actually, just because of the overall record. I know that they had a much better second half this season, and the players that made the All-Star team deserved it. But, yeah, for a 6-12 team to have that many All-Stars is pretty impressive.
Yeah, now to me, in looking at who did and didn't make the team, I think we can all agree, or at least you and I can agree, I think these six guys all deserved their nominations. But the one guy that was left out to me that kind of left me scratching my head was Jalen Saunders. I was surprised he was left off the team. He led the team in receiving. He was fifth in the entire league in receiving. The thing is, there was a lot of competition at this position. Banks, Tasker, S.J. Green, and Greg Ellenson, I think, were all shoe-ins for All-Star Awards. And then it came down to who was going to get that fifth spot. And Saunders lost out to Brad Sinopoli, which, no offense to Brad Sinopoli, I think he's a great player, but he was not an All-Star this year. He barely cracked 1,000 yards. He missed a lot of time due to injury. And I just feel like Saunders had a bigger impact on his team than Sinopoli had on his. But in looking at that also, I have to be pragmatic and understand that the Ticats having three receivers named as All-Stars does seem a bit much. But if you look at the numbers, Hamilton probably did have three of the best five receivers in the East Division this year. And I think Saunders should have been on the team.
Yeah, I'd like to have seen Saunders there as well. He was one of the guys earlier on in the season when everything was going terrible. He was a guy that you look at and say, hey, that guy, he has some potential. He could be a really good player. And he showed it throughout the season that he was a real good player. So I understand. Sinopoli had a good start this season, but he kind of was under the radar overall this season, just in my eyes anyways. So, you know, I could see why I got it and Saunders didn't, but if it was my choice, and if I wasn't a Ticats fan, I'd still say this, I'd put Saunders slightly above Sinopoli just because I think that he was more outstanding this year than Sinopoli was.
Yeah, I think so too, and I sometimes with these awards, guys with names get it, even if they shouldn't. And Sinopoli had his third straight 1,000-yard season. He was named the East Division's top Canadian, which I also don't necessarily agree with. So he's a known commodity, and I think if the Ticats maybe would have been a playoff team, perhaps Saunders would have seen his stock tick, and you would have seen his name listed amongst some of these players. But when you're going up against a guy who has name recognition and some of the awards voters and the all-star voters, of which I am one, kind of just take numbers into account or say, oh, I know him. He had a good year. They don't put as much thought into it maybe as they should. This is how you get things like this. And it's a shame because Saunders was not eligible for Rookie of the Year, which he would have been a leading contender for him. And Richard Leonard might have still beat him out, but Saunders would have definitely been in the conversation for the award.
Because he played
like two games in the NFL, so he wasn't eligible for it. And it's like, so he's not eligible for that and kind of gets robbed of the opportunity to win that award. And then he gets snubbed for an East Division All-Star Award. That's a bitter pill to swallow for the young man, I think.
Yep. A hell of a first season, though, in the CFL. And I think maybe next year we will see him as an All-Star player.
Maybe this fuels him. And he goes, oh, okay, so 1,200 yards wasn't enough. Okay, I guess I got to put up 1,500 yards.
We can only expect a more productive season after the first season, right? Because he's got his feet wet now, and that second half of the season was really impressive. Hopefully, he can just keep it going at the start of next season.
So we're going to dip into some U sports here a couple of times. This is the first time we're going to talk about Canadian college football. We don't do that a ton on the show, but we're going to talk about it here because it has some Ticats connections. Steph Potasek. In an article written by Scott Radley of the Hamilton Spectator that was published on November 7th, indicated that he, former MAC head coach, current-ish Ticats offensive coordinator, would be open to returning to McMaster when his contract expires on December 31st. Now, I hope everyone out there has read the article. It's not Potasek definitely shutting the door on coming back to Hamilton, but he's being pragmatic. His contract's up at the end of the year. There's some coaching turmoil here. We all recognize, fans of this team, that he maybe had a diminished role in his 2 years with the club. And looking to get back into college ball kind of makes sense. And look, he was a hell of a college head coach. McMaster to their first ever Vanier Cup title. So like he had kind of a diminished role here, like I said. So seeing him get back into the college ranks, I think would do well for him. I think he'd have a lot of suitors. He's obviously reached out to McMaster, but he said he wasn't trying to angle to get back as their head coach. But if he's looking and maybe they want him there for some other thing, which I think they'd be crazy not to bring him in, but he could be looking, he could have a bunch of suitors. And the big thing for me as a University of Toronto alum, they just lost their head coach. Greg Gary stepped down, and man, you don't have to be a U of T graduate to put two and two together here, Mike. Steph Potasek looking for a job, U of T looking for a head coach. That's a marriage that would make this varsity blue very, very happy. It's been so long since the Blues mattered in football, and hiring a proven winner like Steph Potasek could be just what my school needs to kind of get back on the map in football in this country.
Absolutely. I mean, that would be huge for U of T. They've been really bad for a long time. We were talking about the last time they were in the Vanier before we recorded the show, and I think it was 93, right?
Yep, 93, Josh?
Yeah, 93. So that's a long time, and you know they haven't really had a sniff at success at all since then, not that I can remember. So getting a guy like Potasek, who's had tons of success at the collegiate level in Canada, would be a huge snag for them. And you know, just speaking on Potasek and his time with the Ticats, not that he's necessarily gone for sure, but we'll see. I feel like he didn't get a fair chance to show what he has. I mean, I think he called the plays for maybe one game when Austin was head coach, and then Austin nixed it and he was calling plays again. And then June Jones comes in, he's, you know, running the offense. So I'm not sure what Steph was really doing most of the time when he was with the Tiger Cats, but I feel like he didn't get a fair shot to show what he can do at the pro level.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you on that. And just for reference, since the year 2000, the best season that Toronto has had in football, they finished 4-4 and seventh in the OUA in 2013 and did not make the playoffs. That's the best this team has done. Now, this team did go through a stretch from 2002 to 2007 where they did not win a game. They set the futility record for Canadian college football. Recently, they've been better. They've at least gotten one win every year since 2008. But Steph Potasek going there could be the shot in the arm this program needs to become a player again in the Canadian college game. And we know he can get the most out of players. And to touch on your Ticat point, yeah, I don't think he was given a chance to succeed. Like, obviously, he was brought in a couple seasons ago under tremendous circumstances. Tommy Condell left. They needed a replacement soon. They reached out to him. He decided to take on the job. Didn't really ever kind of make his mark on the team. And I think you're right. I don't think he's shown what he can do at the professional level. And I don't think his lack of success, for lack of a better word, should really be held against him in this. I don't think he was ever really set up to succeed. And anything kind of that he did was always, the credit was always given to someone else. And kind of the blame was kind of foisted on him. Or even worse, he was kind of a forgotten man. So I think him getting back into the college ranks, if he went to U of T and built that team into a respectable program, I'm not saying he has to go there and win a Vanier or win multiple Vaniers or anything like that. If he can go back there and get that team to being a team that makes the playoffs and is in contention for like the Yates Cup, I think that will raise his stock tremendously in the eyes of not just other CFL teams, but just in general. Like that's an overtaking, that's an undertaking at Toronto that is no one's been able to crack that nut in almost 30 years. So I don't know. I hope that that's where he's headed. If that ever comes out, I will be a very, very happy man.
That would definitely be a huge project to try to turn around that culture with the U of T, because it's been bad for a long time. And yeah, it would be great for his resume to put on there. I turned around U of T. I made them a contender once again, because no one's been able to do it in a very long time. And you know what? Maybe he is content with being a head coach in university football is a big deal, but maybe that's his sweet spot. Maybe that's where he's supposed to be and can have the most success.
Yeah, we're gonna find out, because I don't think he's coming back to the Cats, Mike. I think we put that one to bed, so. But we'll see what he can do. I'm sure he's like we've said numerous times here, he is a tremendous football coach. He will land on his feet somewhere, and here's hoping he lands on his feet at the University of Toronto. Anyway, moving on, CFL news to talk about, and the big thing is, Mike, we got to talk expansion again. Two episodes ago, you and I sat down, and we talked about expansion to Atlantic Canada, and in all honesty, I thought it would be the last time we talk about it for a while, but yet here we are 3 weeks later, and we are talking about Atlantic expansion again. But this time, we have something that I think is pretty substantial and worthy of discussion. Dave Naylor, once again, he broke this story that the CFL has had talks with a group from Halifax about expanding out to Atlantic Canada. Apparently, this group made a presentation to the CFL several weeks ago in Toronto. The meetings have taken place between this group, the league, various orders of government out in Nova Scotia, including, and this is a direct quote, an in-camera session with Halifax City Council that was attended by CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi. This group is apparently modeling its pitch after the OSEG one that landed Ottawa a conditional franchise back in 2008. And we're going to give the Red Blacks some credit here again. For as much flack as I give that team and their fans, and just for the record, I still hate all of you, and your team is stupid. They have proven to be very successful. And if you're going to ape anyone's pitch, they're the ones to absolutely copy. The Halifax group apparently would like to get a conditional franchise granted before the start of next season, with 2020 as a tentative start date. Wow, that's a lot of information to process. So, Mike, I'm going to throw it to you. I'm going to ask you this. I know you hate talking about expansion, but this is different, right? I know you're still there's still plenty of hurdles left to go. This is still in the very, very early stages, although at least I think we can now understand why the commissioner was so bullish about this prospect when we talked about it a couple weeks ago. But even you, a staunch it'll never happen guy, have to be at least a little optimistic. that a 10-team CFL is a realistic possibility now?
This is different. This is a different situation. We actually have names of people that want to own this team, which are Anthony LeBlanc. He used to be a partner with the Arizona Cardinals, or no, Coyotes, sorry, the hockey team, not the football team, and former president. And I see him getting a little bit of slack because of the situation in Arizona with the NHL team. You know, they don't sell that well. But, you know, I think we can cut him some slack here. It's hard to sell hockey to people living in Arizona. You know, it's not a very hot sport. So I'm going to give him a pass on that one.
Hey, man, I know you're going to hate to hear this because you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, but Austin Matthews is from Arizona. So at the worst thing that state ever did for hockey, they at least gave the world Austin Matthews. And to all the Leaf listeners out there, I'm sure they're like, Austin Matthews, yeah. And I know you hate it, but hey, that kid's a hell of a hockey player. So they did something right getting hockey in Arizona.
Yeah, there you go. So, and two other guys, Bruce Bowser, a Halifax native, which is good, and Gary Drummond, a businessman from Regina. So there's some, I believe that LeBlanc is originally from New Brunswick somewhere. So there's some maritime ties there, which I like, and a Saskatchewan tie, which is, you know, they can look at the example of the Rough Riders and how successful they've been. So I think that's, you know, we have actual people who want to buy a team, and that's totally different from what we've ever had in the past. At least they've made it public this time. So yes, there is a lot of hurdles to get over. Number one being the stadium. Halifax mayor and Halifax City Council said they're not paying for any of it. But I see, may I make a suggestion about this? You know, Winnipeg, don't they pay the province or the city a couple million dollars each year to try to pay them back? Is that correct?
Yeah, they borrowed money from the city to build the state. They took out a loan, essentially, of like $90 million or something. And with their profits, they pay that back year after year. So maybe something similar could be worked out there. Is that where you're going?
Yeah, that's where I'm going with it. If they, you know, if they don't want to straight up pay for the stadium, which I understand that, why don't they do something like they did in Winnipeg, where the team pays the city or the province X amount of dollars each year? That's a little bit of a compromise, right? I mean, the Halifax needs to look into the future with this and see the potential in this, the potential revenue in this. I mean, give them a couple of Grey Cups in their first 10 years. Who wouldn't want to go to Halifax to see a Grey Cup?
I'm totally in.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would be complaining that, oh, this Halifax got, you know, two Grey Cups in 10 years. Whatever they have to do to make this work, make it work. Because yes, I've been a very negative person on this issue, but it's just because I've gotten my heart broken so many times thinking about a team in Halifax, and it just doesn't happen. So, yeah, man, let's get this done and get a team running, you know, fairly soon, the next 5 or 10 years.
They're following the Ottawa model. You mentioned they have a Regina guy there. It looks like they're going to try to sell this team as an Atlantic Canada team, not a Halifax team, which I think is smart. Following the Ottawa model, look what the Red Blacks have done for the football culture in Ottawa. As again, like I said, I hate them all and I hate their team is stupid, but man, that they've turned that into a football town. And that was a team that couldn't have given two craps about football for years. The Renegades didn't sell well. They lost all the time. Like this is a city that lost two teams. And now they've made it work. The economics of the CFL make this a lot easier, I think, to accomplish because it's not a hand-to-mouth league. They're not robbing Peter to pay Paul, essentially. This is a league that can be financially stable. Look at the team in Hamilton. They make money, for crying out loud. We're not talking about a lot. Like, yes, there's still problems in this league, and we've talked about them to death. But if they're going to branch, if this group is looking to combine the Rough Riders and the Red Blacks and what they do by making it a regional team as opposed to a city team, and they're going to follow that model of how to do it the right way, this is going to be successful, Mike.
Yeah, I think it will be. If they do it right, I'd like for them to follow the Ottawa model where they build around the stadium, you know, bars and stores and what have you. I think it can be a huge thing for Halifax, huge thing for the Maritimes. It's time for the Maritimes to step out of the 1950s and, you know, look into the future. Let's get something going here. I have ties to the Maritimes. All my mom's side of the family is there. I love the Maritimes, but it's let's just take a step forward, shall we? And it's not just the CFL team. I mean, you could get in if the Canadian Premier League soccer ever gets off the ground, you could have a soccer team in there. You could have events there. You could have concerts there. I think it would be a huge benefit to Halifax and the Maritimes, but I'm just not sure they see the benefit. You know, they don't know maybe that if they have a Grey Cup, they could bring in, you know, $100 million to the city, you know? So someone needs to give them a shake and say, listen, it might be a little rough going at first, but this is a long-term thing, and you're going to see the results after a couple years.
Yeah, a couple other things. You mentioned do what it takes to get done. That's what they did with the Argos at BMO, and that Grey Cup last year, the game was fantastic. The lead-up to it was not, but if that's what it took to get the Argos out of the Sky Dome and into a facility that can help them grow, it hasn't worked yet, but this is a process, and we're not going to sit here and talk about the Argos and attendance and any of that crap, but it's a process, but it was the right first step, and it took giving them a quote-unquote undeserved Grey Cup, fine, whatever, take it. Like you said, if we got to give two Grey Cups to Halifax out the gate in the first 8 to 10 years, so be it. It's worth it to get this team, this 10th team here. The only thing, we talked about the stadium, that is the biggest hurdle. I can't believe how aggressive they are being in when they want this team up and running. 3 years?
Right.
That is, like, less than 3 years, actually. They want it up and running by the start of the 2020 season, and they want a franchise granted them before kickoff of the 2018 season. Like, that tells me either that they have a plan that they think is going to work, or they're just going balls to the wall. One of the two, and either way, I kind of like it, but look, Ottawa got their conditional franchise granted them in 08. They didn't start until 2014. If it takes that amount of time, I hope these guys don't see that as a failure. Take as much time as you need to do it the right way, and then we're talking about a 10-team CFL for the rest of time, not a 10-team CFL for 4 or 5 years, and then this thing goes belly up. I want to see this succeed for the long term. Take as much time as they need, but I'm impressed by how aggressive they're trying to be. Much like when Randy Ambrosi talked about it, we were kind of like, well, why is he talking about this? This kind of came out of nowhere. If they're talking about these types of dates, they must have a plan that they think is going to receive approval. Yeah. And I don't know, that's gutsy, and I like it.
Yeah, they must have a plan with the stadium, because that's the biggest thing, right? If they get an appropriate stadium, I mean, we're going full ahead. Like, there's no questioning if they'll get a team or not if they have a suitable stadium. So they must have some sort of plan worked out. I don't know if they have the money to actually pay for the stadium themselves. That's a lot of money, but get it done. I like the 2020 idea. I mean, this to me, the sooner the better. I know that they have to take their time with it and make it right, but if we can get this thing done by 2020, that's not very far away, man. I mean, that's just a couple years away. I could, in my wildest dreams, I could not imagine a team in Halifax by 2020.
Dude, if someone would have told me at 30 that we would have a team in Halifax before I turned 40, I'd have called you crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't turn 40 till 2022. If this team's up and running by 2020, they'll have achieved that. And I would have said, just 5 years ago, I would have said, you're nuts. Like, I want it to happen. I'd love it to happen. You and I have talked about it both on mic and off mic. We both want this to happen, but if you would have told me that was the case, I would have said you're absolutely – there's no way that'll get – when I went out there for Touchdown Atlantic in 2011, if someone would have said, hey, man, in less than 10 years, there's going to be a permanent CFL franchise out in these parts, I'd have said you're nuts. But we're on the precipice of that, man. We're on the precipice of that, and that's exciting. That's like – again, we temper our expectations mainly because of the stadium, but, man, this is hard not to get excited about.
It really is. And, you know, I don't think anything gets CFL fans more excited than talk about expansion to Halifax. I mean, CFL fans have been dreaming about this for so long. It'd be such a benefit to the league. You know, you add in a 10th team, that means more money from TV. You know, it makes a league coast to coast. You could have maybe BC and Halifax play on Labor Day, so BC finally has a Labor Day rivalry. You know, there's just so many positives that can happen by getting this 10th team in the league. And yeah, I'm genuinely excited and optimistic about this happening now.
You know it's real when Mike is positive about expansion. He has been since day one of this show. I wouldn't say you're negative. I'd say you were cynical, or you were you lived out there, and that's why I always trust your opinion. And I was out there, and I saw a lot of NFL jerseys at the game I went to, and I saw a lot of Ticats fans and Stampeder fans. It wasn't as many locals as people would have liked. Now, that was in New Brunswick, to be honest, but New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, like, this is going to be an Atlantic Canada team. So I understood your skepticism, and if you're on board, man, you know something must be going right here, because Mike does not get like this just out of nowhere.
No, there's actual substance to it this time. That's the difference, right? There's actual substance, and I'm really excited about it. There's been some good news leading up to Grey Cup. It's been a pretty good week for the CFL.
Yeah, we're not talking about ticket sales. We're talking about possible expanding the league. This is a night and day difference from a year ago, and that is awesome. Okay. I think we've talked enough about expansion. I'm sure we're going to be talking about it again in the future when more news comes out. We're excited, I think you can tell, but we have to move on to talking about other stuff. All-Stars, we talked about the Ticats. We're going to talk league-wide now. I want to talk about some snubs here, Mike. We mentioned Jalen Saunders earlier, and we talked about the Ticats in general. But first on my list of snubs, I don't know who you have on yours. I got three guys here. The first on my list, Martise Jackson, losing out for the East special teams player to Deontay Spencer. We mentioned this a couple weeks ago when we were talking about who was going to win awards, who was going to be the recipients of the division awards. And this one to me reeks of the voters picking Spencer because of that massive game he had in week 19. And going to the awards, I think in this as well, Spencer beating out Jackson for the best, for most outstanding special teams player in the East was a kind of a snub as well. I just think Jackson was the better player. I wrote a piece about it for Three Down Nation, and Jackson's numbers were they were comparable, but special teams wise, Jackson was the better player. Deontay Spencer may have been the better overall player because of his role on offense, but Jackson was the special teams player, and I think he got absolutely robbed of both the East Best Special Team Player Award and the All-Star spot.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I mean, Spencer came on strong late in the season, but overall, if we're looking at the season as a whole, I mean, Martise Jackson was maybe not lighting it up the whole season, but he was more on my radar than Deontay Spencer.
Another guy that I have down here, BJ Cunningham. Now, this goes back to kind of the Saunders argument. It's tough. There were a lot of good receivers, a lot of top echelon receivers in the East Division this year. So kind of similar to him, I think Cunningham kind of got locked because he's not a household name, not yet. But he had some great – go look at his numbers. He had great numbers despite dealing with awful quarterback play all year with the Alouettes. Like, for him to put up close to 1,200 yards receiving, like, that's impressive for a guy who dealt with Darian Durant not being able to hit the broadside of a barn and then dealing with all those myriad backup quarterbacks that the Owls put in there that just sucked. So for Cunningham to put up those kind of numbers in that offense this year with all the turmoil that happened in Montreal – kind of deserved a spot, no?
I'd have to say so. I mean, I didn't really notice him that much, but that's probably just because, you know what? I'll be honest here. I didn't think that Luke Tasker had the record-breaking season for the Ticats that he had. So sometimes these players, they sneak up on you, and I noticed Cunningham a little bit later on in the season. He started making some really nice catches, but if you say the numbers are there, then, I'd have to believe that he had a pretty good season.
Yeah, the last guy on this to me is the biggest snub of all, and it's Tommy Campbell from the Calgary Stampeders. How he wasn't voted as one of the best DBs in the West shocked me. He is basically the epitome of a lockdown corner, maybe the best DB in the league that since Delvin Bro. Delvin Bro was that lockdown corner that you stuck him on a guy and he took him away. That's what Tommy Campbell is. And you look at who was voted for these awards, and you see three members of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, three good, Chris Randall, TJ Heath, and Taylor Loeffler, all very good players. But they had a lot of stats, but that Winnipeg defense gave up a ludicrous amount of passing yards. And I know Randall, Heath, and Loeffler put up some, like, Loeffler had a ton of tackles, Heath a ton of interceptions. Randall was pretty much an all-around great player. But when the defense as a whole gives up that much, it's hard for me to look and say, okay, they deserve three spots of five in the DBs there. When Tommy Campbell, like, shut down every receiver he played against, like, his numbers don't exist because he was just that good. Team stopped throwing his way. So I think, and again, this looks to me like voters looked at stats and didn't look beyond that. And it's tough because not everyone can watch every game. I understand that. But man, Tommy Campbell should have been an All-Star this year, no doubt.
Yeah, he was the only one on my list that was left off that I thought should have been on. So I'm in agreement with you on this. Now, it's hard for me to judge necessarily watching him play, but I'm just going on other people's opinions of him and how good of a football player he has been this year. So I'd have to agree with you. And you look at the Calgary Stampeders defense, and they've been by far, in my opinion, the best defense all season long, and they've really carried that team through their offensive struggles, and Tommy Campbell has been a huge part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. He was the big one for me. So if you don't mind, you want to move on to some award snubs. Do you have anyone that you thought was kind of snubbed in the awards this year?
I think it was basically besides Richard Leonard, which you could argue he could have got a nomination, but a lot of people look at offensive stats, and James Wilder came on strong, really strong. He had a hell of a second half of the season, but I'm pretty sure I'm in agreement with you when I say Richard Leonard was in basically the whole season and was performing at a very high level the whole season.
He was a Ticats best DB from day one and on day 200, whenever the season ended. I don't know how many days it is. And Wilder is a great player and will be a great player for the next few years. If forever long he's playing for the Argos, I think Wilder has a tremendous future in this league. But a lot of his biggest – he had like three or four really big games and then kind of –
he's been shut down, right? He's been shut down a couple times.
Right, like that game that the Argos played here against Ticats after he had had two almost 200-yard games, came in here and had like less than 40 yards rushing. Like, and you can say, oh, that, the, you know, whatever, Ray had a big game or what. They scored 40-something points in that game, and Wilder didn't do a heck of a lot. So he can be shut down. And this is not, again, when I say snubs, everyone who's picked for these awards are great players. I just think that they weren't the right choice this year. Richard Leonard tops that list for me. He was outstanding, the very definition of outstanding as a rookie for this team. He moved from wide side corner into field halfback, which is a difficult position to play, and he excelled. Two interceptions in the last game of the season. Like, he has a very bright future in this league. So I just feel like he deserved it. And again, it looks like it's very easy to go, oh, look at the numbers of the running back. It's very difficult to go, oh, look at how well the DB played. So I think that's just kind of where this went. I mentioned Spencer over Jackson for East Special Teams Player of the Year. I thought we don't have to go into that again. The other one that I kind of, and this got me a lot of flack when I wrote this for Three Down, I thought Chris Jones should have been the West Coach of the Year over Dave Dickinson. We've talked about the Stampeders. You've mentioned it numerous times that there was something missing from them this year. They went on that three-game losing streak to end the year, and I know they've gotten to the Grey Cup and all that stuff, but that has nothing to do with the awards voting. These votes are cast and done by the end of the regular season. Before kickoff of the East semifinal, these awards have to be voted on and sent in. So the playoffs have nothing to do with this. The turnaround Chris Jones made in Saskatchewan, and this is where I come look at Coach of the Year. Expectations versus accomplishment. Yes, Dave Dickinson led the Calgary Stampeders to a 13-win season, first place in the West, hosting the West Final, now has got them to Grey Cup. But you expected that from the Calgary Stampeders. And in fact, the Stampeders are worse this year than they were a year ago. You look at Chris Jones, no one expected the Riders to turn it around to this. They won 11 games. If you would have said they're going to win 8 games, make the playoffs, sure. 11 games? They were 11-7 this year. That is a hell of a turnaround from a team that finished dead last year. So, I don't know. To me, I feel like because of the expectations set for both guys, Dave Dickinson did not even reach, I think, the expectations that people might have had for the Calgary Stampeders. Even though the Stamps had a great year, Chris Jones far exceeded anything anyone could have thought the Rough Riders would do this year.
And also, Dickinson's an offensive guy. I mean, he's an offensive coach, and the offense kind of stunk this year for the Stampeders. Now, their record is really good. They're going to the Grey Cup and all that stuff, but I can see your point because the defense really carried this team. Every game that I watched, I was not overly impressed with the offense. They kind of just did their thing, and then they pull away when they had to. But it wasn't an overall impressive performance this season by the Calgary Stampeders offense, that's for sure.
Yeah, so for those are the ones I think of. Any snubs that you can think of, or are you just going to stick with the Leonard one? Because I think that is the big one, but do you have any other?
That's the big one. That's the one for me that's really stood out.
Yeah, the one that I think that voters got absolutely right is Riley and Ray for MLP. Like, we were going to give them some crap here for their picks. That's the one. Those were the two guys that, to me, no doubt, MLP. That's a tough battle. I kind of wish Edmonton would have got to the Grey Cup, because it would have been nice to see those two guys go at it. But we're going to get a good game in Calgary and Toronto, I believe. But, man, Ray and Riley dueling out, that would have been something good.
That's what I was hoping for, but way she goes, eh? Way she goes.
It is the way she goes. Okay, so we took last week off, so we didn't have a chance to do a show, period. And we've kind of been not bozo free, but we've been very lax in bozos. But we make up for it this week, Mike. We got two bozos this week, so why don't you tell everyone who gets to share the award this week, sir?
Well, the first bozo goes out to Jason Moss for his head scratching decision. Yeah, to kick the field goal with, I believe, a minute 20 seconds left when they were down by 7 inside the red zone at the 13-yard line when they previously on the same drive went for it on 3rd and 10 from around the 50-yard line. I do not understand the logic. I know I am not alone in this. To go for it at that position and then not go for it when you're 3rd and 4 at the 13-yard line is very, very bozo-ish. So he gets my one bozo of the week this week, just a very dumb, interesting call by him. And my second bozo goes out to Rod Peterson, who has been a bozo on the show at least once before, publicly calling out the league saying that they would rather have the Argonauts in the Grey Cup except, you know, over the Rough Riders, which is ludicrous to me. I'm not sure what he's basing it on. If he's basing it on the roughing the passer call that was a non-call and then got challenged and reviewed and was still a non-call, I don't see it. I don't think you call that roughing the passer in the playoffs. He might have grazed his face mask slightly, but if you're going to call it that tight, I don't want to be a part of it. So the two bozos this week are Jason Moss and Rod Peterson.
So let's talk about Roddy for a second. The Jason Moss one, we'll get into that. That's more football. This one's more fun. This guy is turning into the Alex Jones of the Canadian Football League. He should start a website with just ridiculous, like, he should start a show where he just talks about ridiculous conspiracy theories. I wonder what else he's got under his hat. He's been claiming conspiracy against the Riders now since the beginning of last season. So not only was Jeffrey Orridge in on it, now Randy Ambrosi's in on it. Like, I can only laugh because it's so ridiculous. And was the conspiracy still alive when the Riders took the lead on a punt return with what, like, 3 minutes left in the game? Was that playing into the conspiracy? Was the conspiracy that the Riders were to go down, make this comeback, and then the Argos were going to win it late so as to break? Like, I'm trying to figure out how the conspiracy works, really. But, like, his exact quote on Twitter was, "It's clear the preference is to have Toronto in the Grey Cup." And it's like, man, just stop talking. Like, you are a bozo. Like, we should just rename the Rod Peterson of the Week Award for the idiotic things he said. This is out to lunch. Like, it barely merits talking about.
Mentioning,
but
the guy is the play-by-play announcer for the Rough Riders. He's in a high position. He used to be a writer for CFL.ca. He has his own radio show in Saskatchewan. I just don't understand why he says these outrageous things. It's funny. I don't know if he's playing a character or if he actually thinks these things. Similar to Alex Jones. I don't know, man. He's an interesting cat, that's for sure.
Yeah, honestly, I'd really like to meet him and just have a conversation with him to see if he's as crazy in person as his online persona allows. Like, I wonder if he's going to be a Grey Cup. Maybe you get a chance to sidle up next to him, and I don't know.
I'm pretty
man.
Sure he will.
I don't
he will,
know,
probably.
Man. Kevin Glenn
had a piss poor game. He threw like 3 interceptions, and, you know, Brandon Brandt came in, and he wasn't much better. So to blame it on the league is just ludicrous to me.
So the other one, Jason Moss, this one, when I was watching this, I sat and I was watching the game with my dad and my brother, and we're like, why is he kicking a field goal? He's down 7 with less than 2 minutes left. What is he doing? It made absolutely no sense. And I tweeted out after the game that I thought it was the worst in-game coaching decision I have ever seen. I thought it was worse than Pete Carroll not running it on the one-yard line with Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. I thought it was worse than the Atlanta Falcons last year deciding not to run the ball when they had a 25-point lead. I thought it was worse than the decision Dave Dickens had made last year to put in Andrew Buckley to run on the one-yard line, because you look at all those decisions and it's like, okay, the Falcons were trying to score more points and really put the game out of reach. Okay, cool. They have a high-flying offense. I get it. Pete Carroll, put the ball in his quarterback's hands. Okay, make a play. I heard afterwards, we're going to throw it here. If it didn't wasn't successful, we're going to run on the next play. Okay, cool. Russell Wilson's a good player. I get it. It's justifiable. I think they're wrong, but it's justifiable. The Dave Dickinson one, all year on the one-yard line, they put in Andrew Buckley to run it in, and it worked. This time it didn't. Okay, those are understandable. Why the hell Jason Moss decided that it was best to lose by four than to go for it and maybe tie the game, I'll never know. And I saw his explanation-ish after the game, and it was just kind of like he didn't really explain why he did it, just that, well, I thought we kicked a field goal and then we get a stop and then we get the ball back and then we go down and score. Okay, fine.
Still to score a touchdown, though.
Like, That's just it. If it would have been kick the field goal to then take it to where a field goal will tie or win you the game, I understand. They still have to march the field and score a touchdown. And the big thing about it to me is if they would have gone for it on third down at that point and not made it, well, then the Calgary Stampeders are backed up inside their own 15-yard line. You get that stop there. At least their field position is better. Instead, they kick the field goal. They kick it off. The Stamps get it like the 30-ish yard line. Get some yards and then boot it away. And now Edmonton fumbled and then the game was over anyway. But none of it made sense. It really didn't. And I know Glenn Suter was on TV talking about trying to make the excuse of, oh, maybe he didn't know what the score was. And that makes it worse, in my opinion. But
right.
Jason Moss obviously knew what the score was. This is a bozo decision by a head coach. And I just don't get what he was thinking.
He said he was playing to win, but I don't get that at all. If you're playing to win, go for it.
Then you go for it. You score a touchdown. You go for two
go for two.
Yeah. That's playing to win. This is playing to, I don't even know.
It was a terrible decision on his part. He's going to get, he's getting a ton of heat for it in Edmonton. It was on the front page of a couple papers I saw this morning, criticizing the move. So yeah, I don't get it. He changed his mind, his strategy, in the same drive. We're going to go for it on 3rd and 10 at the 50, but we're not going to go for it for 3rd and 4 when we're at the 13-yard line. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And you're right. If they didn't get it, then they're pinned deep and they still have a shot at this, the St. Peter's punt, and then they still have good field position with, maybe a minute left or whatever it was. So I don't know what the hell was going through his head, man. I have no idea.
I don't know who said it or who wrote it, but I saw it and someone said, what would Jason Moss, the quarterback, have thought of Jason Moss, the head coach, taking the ball out of his quarterback's hands down a touchdown inside the opponent's 15-yard line with 2 minutes left? And he would have been apoplectic. He would have been pissed. No, we go for it. And he has Mike Riley. They have Brandon Zylstra. They have Darrell Walker. They have C.J. Gable.
C.J. Gable.
They have Darius Bowman. Like, they have weapons on that offense. Calvin McCarty makes one-handed catches like he's freaking Odell Beckham. Mm-hmm. They have guys that they could have gone to in that situation. It was an insane decision. I don't know how anyone could justify it. Moss didn't even try to justify it. He just said, I don't regret making the call and I'd have done it again kind of thing. But I don't know.
He's just a very stubborn, stubborn man.
Yeah.
I think we can see that. So, it's too bad for the Eskimos. But, that's the way she goes, right?
That is the way she goes. All right, Mike, let's talk some football. We got two game previews coming up. People are probably going, two? What the heck? There's only one game left. We're going to talk some Vanier Cup right now. The stage is set, Mike, for the 53rd Vanier Cup that we played right here in Hamilton at Tim Hortons Field this Saturday. I know we said earlier we don't really cover a lot of U sports football here on the show, but I'll be headed to the game. And as I said, it's one of the reasons I won't be in Ottawa for the Grey Cup this year. So I thought maybe we could make some predictions and kind of talk about it. But let's set the stage for everyone here. Western from London advanced to the title game by beating Acadia 81-3 in the UTEC Bowl, while Laval. Woof indeed. While Laval got to Hamilton by beating Calgary 35-23 in the Mitchell Bowl. So this is that game, the Calgary-Laval game, was a rematch of last year's incredible Vanier Cup that I also attended. So no surprise that those two teams kind of went toe-to-toe. So It's Western versus Laval, Ontario versus Quebec, in a game that I think is going to have a very pro-Western crowd, seeing as how London, Ontario, about an hour away from Hamilton, and I kind of hope this also means we'll see a surge in ticket sales over the next few days, so fans could be in for a real treat when these two powerhouses, these are two great football programs in Canada, they're going to go toe-to-toe. Last year's game was a classic. You watched the Vanier last year, right?
I did. It was a very good game. I always watch the Vanier available to watch. But it was a great game.
Absolutely awesome game. I was so happy to be in attendance. It was so much fun. Those two teams, Calgary and Laval, put on a show. I think we could be in store for a classic between Western and Laval this year. So are you planning on watching this year's game? You're going to the 3-down throwdown. I believe they're going to have the game on TV.
I believe it's
going to
be on.
So.
Yep. Well, you know, Dunker will want to watch it. He's as being a former quarterback in the U Sports or the CIS at the time. So, yeah, I'm always pumped to watch the Vanier Cup, and I really hope there's a good crowd because, you know, those kids deserve to have a big crowd watch them in a championship game.
Yeah, I completely agree. So sidle up to the Dunkster while the game's on. Have yourself a beer. Give him, like, a protein shake or whatever weird thing he drinks because he's all healthy and crap. So go sit next to him and pick his brain because that guy knows more about – has probably forgotten more about college football in Canada than you or I will ever know. But we're both going to watch this game. So why don't we make some predictions, Mike? I think I speak for the both of us in saying neither of us are what you would call Canadian university football experts, but I think we should make some predictions anyway. So who you got in this one, pal? Western or Laval?
I'm going to go with Western. They blew out Acadia, I believe it was. You know, you can't really judge too much of that because I've always thought that the AUS is by far the weakest conference in U Sports football, but I think they're undefeated in London. You know, I grew up about an hour and a half away from London. So, and I'm just sick of Laval. So I'm going to go with the Western Mustangs.
I am always anyone but Laval, except when they played McMaster those 2 years. I kind of cheered for them because I knew a lot of people that went to Mac, and I was like, I don't want Mac to win. But anyway, I'm going to go with Western. I think the hometown crowd, I think that's going to be enough for the Mustangs to take the Vanier Cup back to London for, and this shocked me when I was doing research on this, for the first time since 1994. Can you believe that as good as Western has been over all these years, they haven't won a Vanier in 23 years?
I was also shocked when you told me this. When you think of the OUA, you think of a couple teams, and Western is at the top of that list. They've been the model franchise for as long as I've been alive, and to hear that they haven't won a Vanier Cup in that long is pretty damn surprising.
We talked about U of T earlier, where I went to school. They didn't win a game between 2002 and 2007, and their Vanier Cup drought is 1 year shorter or 1 year longer than Western's. U of T last won, we talked about, 93. Next year, Western won. They haven't won since. They've been to a couple. They lost to Laval in Hamilton. I think it was 2008. But just like you said, the AUS, the Atlantic University schools are terrible. They've won, St. Mary's won a couple of Vaniers in that time. Like it's incredible to me that Western has not won the Vanier Cup in nearly 25 years. I don't follow it all that closely, and that's partially my mistake, but I would have bet if someone had said, when's the last time Western won, I would have said, I don't know, sometime in the mid 2000s, but no, 1994. I was 12 years old. I can't, like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah, don't you think of Western as the powerhouse of the OUA? Like, general?
Yeah, it's them. It's McMaster. Laurier is usually pretty good. But those are the big three. Ottawa sometimes butts up there and gets it. I think Ottawa and Queens, I think, have won Vanier since the last time Western won one. Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy to me. But yeah, I think of Western as kind of like the top team. And then I think of, like, not far below, but a notch below. You got your Laurier and your McMaster. But yeah, Western to me is the team. Every year I think Western is the team to beat in the OUA. And to know that this is like, that's just, they haven't, like, this could be the first time they've won in almost 25 years. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is very crazy. I'm hoping, I think we'll have a good game though. Two Ontario and Quebec, two good conferences with a lot of good teams. So they had some pretty good competition coming out of there. So I think we'll see a competitive game, and I'm hoping for you because you'll be there. I hope it's just as good as last year's.
Yeah, I really do. So, okay, let's get to the big one, Mike. Let's end the show by talking Grey Cup. We're going to preview this game. We're going to make some picks. I can't believe we finally reached the end of the season. The journey that began for nine back in June ends with two in Ottawa this Sunday when the East Division champion, pains me to say this, the East Division champion Toronto Argonauts take on the West Division champion Calgary Stampeders in the 105th Grey Cup. I think I speak for both of us when I say I'm not sure many people would have picked this matchup at the beginning of the season, but here we are. If anyone out there picked Toronto at the start of the season that isn't an Argos fan, hit me up because I think I need to know what devil's magic you were conjuring up to make that pick. This will be the fourth time these two teams have clashed in the Grey Cup, and in researching it for the show, all three previous matchups were kind of historically important. They first met in 1971. The Stamps won that game 14-11, and anyone out there who follows any sort of CFL history will always remember it for the Leon McQuay fumble. Joe Theismann was the quarterback for the Argos that year. It was that's a Grey Cup game that lives on in lore because of what happened in that one. Then the next time they met was 20 years later in 1991. This one, for children of the CFL, I think for you and I, this is a very big Grey Cup. It was Doug Flutie's Calgary Stampeders facing that loaded Argos team that had Matt Dunnigan, that Pinball Clemens, they had Rocket Ishmael. Like, that was maybe the first Grey Cup I really remember, to be honest with you. It had the Rocket has the return, the beer can gets thrown on the field. That was the first ever Grey Cup hosted by Winnipeg, so a lot of historical significance.
Ownership group of Candy and
Wayne Gretzky
and McNall. So yeah, that was a, you know, you think it's 71 or 91, and you know, 71, the Argos were a pretty big deal back then with that team. And 91, they kind of resurrected themselves, and they were pretty popular with Rocket Ishmael and all that. And then the 100th Grey Cup, too. So there's been a lot of interesting matchups.
Yeah, like you said, the last one, just 5 years ago, they met in the 100th in Toronto, Ray's first year with the Argos. So, like, when these two teams meet, there's things matter. It's crazy to think it. So I don't know what we're going to think of in 15, 20 years' time about this game, but it's always an intriguing matchup. So it's only the fourth time that we've ever seen these two teams match up. The Argos have a 2-1 lead. They won in 91. They won in 2012. The Stamps won 71. So what are you kind of expecting from this game, Mike, now that we kind of have all this background information?
I'm hoping for, you know, to be honest with you, I don't really have a favorite in this one. I'm not, I don't know if I should say this. I'm kind of pulling for the Argos. I don't like the Stampeders or Bo Levi Mitchell. And I'm sorry to everyone out there. I know the Argos suck and all that stuff, and I do not like them, but I don't know. They're a more likable team.
Oh, thank you so much, sir,
yeah,
for saying that.
That's what you're looking for? Yeah.
That is exactly what I was looking for. You remember all the nasty things people said to me when for those who aren't in the know, on Three Down Nation, I wrote a piece before the playoffs started ranking the six teams based on likability. It's not a precise science. I just looked at the six teams like, if I was a neutral fan, who would I look at in this and go, I kind of like them. I took a ton of crap because I had Ottawa last, but that was mostly a lot in jest because I just wanted to put Ottawa last so that people would be pissed off. I had Edmonton low just because of Jason Moss thing. Calgary, I think, was just ahead of them. My top three were Saskatchewan and Winnipeg. And Toronto I had at number one. And the world of crap I took for that decision. You're a Ticat fan. How dare you think the Argos are likable? And you look at the team and you go, well, you know, Jim Popp's a really good general manager. And Mark Trestman's a really good head coach. And how do you not like Ricky Ray? Honestly, how can you look at Ricky Ray and go, I hate that guy? You can't. He's like, I want to see Ricky Ray play well. Ricky Ray is maybe non-Ticats division, one of my three favorite players to ever play in the CFL. And yeah, it sucks that he plays for Toronto. But you look at this Toronto team and James Wilder Jr. is fun to watch. And that defense flies around. And yeah, Sean Lemon's a jerk, but he's entertaining. It's like, there's not a whole lot to hit dislike about this Argos team. So I put them one and oh my God, the vitriol. I had a guy threaten to beat me up when he saw me. Like, holy smokes. If you see my Twitter handle, asshat Eastern clown, that came from that comment section. It's just, it was crazy the amount of hate that generated. But I'm with you, man. I'm looking at both these teams and yeah, Calgary should win, but like, who wants to cheer for a front runner? And you're right, Bo Levi Mitchell, and I wrote this in the piece, he can be a little bit arrogant. And yeah, he's a great football player, but you know, like, you know what? You kind of root for him to lose. It doesn't happen very often, so when the opportunity arises, you're not upset when they do. And to lose again in the big game and to kind of knock him down a couple notches, I don't think anyone outside
his
of Calgary
ego.
Really, yeah, kind of like, and no one outside of Calgary would really look at it and go like, oh well, you know, I feel bad for Mitchell. No, you kind of be like, yeah, I kind of like that he got taken down a few pegs. So I look at this game and yet. I'm with you, man. We're probably going to take a load of crap in the comment section and on Twitter for this, but I don't know, man. Kind of like the Argos.
That's just how I feel. You know, if people want to crap on me too, they're more than welcome to, but that's just, I don't like Bo. There's not a lot of Calgary players that I can name that I really dislike, but Bo just bugs me. And I'd like for him to get knocked down a couple of pegs. You know, I think that his ego is so inflated because of all the success he's had, but and don't get me wrong, Bo's a really good quarterback, maybe even a great quarterback, but I don't think he'd be as good if he was on a different team. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so now that you've riled up all of our listeners out in Calgary, why don't we make some great? Why don't we make some predictions? Why don't we predict who's going to win the game? And I'll even throw this one out. Give me the MVP if you can come up with one. So Mike, Toronto Argonauts, Calgary Stampeders in Ottawa for the Grey Cup. Who's coming home with the big trophy?
Man, you know, obviously Calgary's got to be the favorite. I'm going to go with the underdog. I'm going to pick the Argonauts. I think that they are hitting their stride at the right time. And it's going to be another upset loss for the Stampeders. You know, I don't think it's as big an upset as it was last year against Ottawa. But I think the Argonauts find a way to steal one. In Ottawa this Sunday.
All right. If you'll
MVP. Yep. I'm gonna go with Ray. I know it's the obvious pick. I just think that Calgary will focus heavily on shutting down James Wilder Jr. and Ricky Ray will have to guide this team to victory offensively.
Okay, so I'd like you to indulge me for a second. I'm gonna read a passage from a piece I wrote on Three Down Nation back on October 1st, following the Argos defeat of the Ticats at Tim Hortons Field in late September in an overtime game. Here's what I wrote after that game was over. It said, Hamilton's playoff hopes aren't dead, but they are most definitely getting close. Catching the Argos is pretty much out now, and they, meaning the Argos, will likely win the division. Get to the Grey Cup, where they will face Calgary, and since the Stamps tend to choke in the big game, we might as well start coming around to the idea that the Argos are going to win the Grey Cup. So that's what I wrote on October 1st,
and also,
Mike.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's what I wrote then. I see no reason not to stand by that prediction. So I'm going to say the Argos win on Sunday. I'm going to give you a score of 29-24, and I'm with you, pal. I think Ricky Ray is named MVP.
There you go. And I have seen the Argos win Grey Cups on multiple occasions live. So, you know, I don't see that trend ending anytime soon to put me in. Even though I want the Argos to win this time, you know, it does kind of suck going to a Grey Cup and seeing them win it, you know.
Oh, yeah, you were in Ottawa the last time they had a Grey Cup, and the Argos won that one too, weren't you?
Yep, and 96 in Hamilton.
Oh, my God, and the one I went to 2012, and that was one of the – we can't go to Grey Cups anymore.
I know, because the Argos will be in it.
Oh, my God, we're their good luck charm. How the hell did this
happen? Oh, no. No, this can't be. But also, another likable person on the Argonauts, SJ Green, coming off that injury.
Yeah,
from
last
season comeback, having a tremendous, his best season statistically. So, you know, that's another likable guy in the Argonauts. And that's all I have to say about liking the Argos. We need to stop talking about that.
We really do, but we're both picking the Argos to win this one, and now we got to go have a shower and get this grime off us because it just feels gross. So that's the show for this week, folks. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or listen to it on 3downnation.com. If you want to ask us a question, we didn't do questions this week. We had a ton of stuff to talk about. But we will be getting questions on future episodes. So if you want to, you can hit us up on Twitter at our show Twitter account at PodskiWeeWee, or you can hit us up on our individual Twitter accounts. Mike, your personal Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am JoshSmith_82. And you can always post those questions in the comment section on 3downnation.com. So that was episode 95 of PodskiWeeWee. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.